Hello and welcome to Yoga with Subhash. I'm delighted to present to you this audio recording of the workshop that I presented on August 15th on the topic of Kundalini and the Nadi system. I hope you enjoy it and I would love to hear your feedback. As most of you are aware, you know, I started doing these workshops almost, now it's almost a year and a half, I would think. My main objective was actually to talk only about Yoga Sutras of Patanjali. I mean, that was my main intention at the time. And that's what we did for the first almost 13 sessions. So 13 months is roughly as much as we spent on talking about the Yoga Sutras. And then at the end of that, you know, there was kind of a discussion as to what people wanted to listen to next, and somebody suggested Bhagavad Gita. So we had a session on the Gita last month. And again, at the end of that session, again, there was a discussion as to what they want next. So I think some people in the crowd, some of you were here, they said they want to talk about Kundalini. So I said, all right, we'll prepare something about Kundalini. All right, so that's what we are going to do today. It's going to be a discussion, predominantly, on what Kundalini is and what the origins are, history, etc., what it all means. Okay, so when I started looking at it, I realized that I definitely cannot finish it all in one session, so I said we'll do at least two. So today's talk is predominantly on the concept of Kundalini and the Nadis. The nadis are the nervous system. We'll talk about that. And next month, see if we can focus on the chakras predominantly, all the chakras. Okay. So today it'll be more of an introduction plus some more on the Kundalini itself. All right. How many of you are familiar with Kundalini? Most of you are. Okay. Okay. So this is roughly the outline that I've prepared. And I shared some of these things with you. And after I sent out those slides to you, I added a few more. So, you know, I'll be sending you an updated version of this at the end of this class. So that way, you know, you'll be up to date. So this is the basic outline. What is Kundalini? Kundalini and how yoga fit in. A very basic introduction to chakras today. Like I said, next month we will be doing a more detailed discussion on the chakras. What's the nadi system? Nadis are all the subtle channels of energy, prana, as we know them. We'll talk about that. What are some of the listed methods of awakening Kundalini? Just very briefly, I don't want to go through much of that. Also want to talk about koshas and if there is a relationship between koshas and chakras. If you don't know these terms, wait till we get to that. So you'll know what koshas are. And then we'll also do actually a practice which is called the Bhuta Shuddhi or element or chakra cleansing practice. I have an audio recording that we will play, and then it's a meditation basically. We'll just do that for 10 to 12 minutes at the end. All right? So that's what we plan to do today. So what is Kundalini? It's a Sanskrit word like everything else is in yoga. It comes from the word kundala. Kundala means anything that's coiled, that is circular in shape, that's called kundala. So anything that is in a coiled up shape becomes Kundalini. So why is it coiled up and all that? That's what we want to understand now. What is Kundalini and what's the significance of these coils, etc. So the whole concept of Kundalini, it comes from a very ancient system in India called Tantra. T-A-N-T-R-A. Has everyone heard the term Tantra? Yeah. Okay, most of you have. Okay. What is Tantra? What is it? That's one of the ways to look at it. Tantra is one of the systems of practice and thought in India. So I should go forward just to what happened. I don't have that slide in my... I don't have that slide here, but let me just explain what this is. You know, in India, we have four different categories of scriptures, so to say, four categories of scriptures. The first one is called Shruti. Shruti is what? Anybody know what Shruti is?
Revealed.
Revealed, which is not heard, which is something that has been revealed to these ancient yogis while they were in their deepest state of meditation. So these scriptural knowledge, this was revealed to them. They did not think about it. There was no intellectual thinking involved in that. That's the whole idea. So it's called Shruti, means it's all heard. Shruti means something that's heard. And the scriptures that fall into that category are the Vedas and Upanishads. Anybody who has never heard the term Veda? Everyone has heard the term Veda. What's Veda? What is Vedas?
Ancient texts.
It's the ancient books of knowledge, basically. Ancient books of knowledge, which, like I said, were revealed to these ancient yogis while in their deepest states of meditation. They did not intellectually write them down or think about it. So that's called a Shruti. And Upanishads are essentially the essence of the information in the Vedas, which becomes the last part of the Vedas. They are called Upanishads, and there are plenty of those. Okay, we're not getting into that stuff. Okay, but they all contain the essential knowledge kind of pulled together from the Vedas.
Vedas is revealed and Upanishad
are also a part of that.
Intellectually defined but
they are also considered Shrutis.
Okay.
They are still considered Shrutis, even though they have been kind of summarized, or so to say, by these rishis, but because it's based on information that is a Shruti, this is also called a Shruti. The next...
Would it be fair to say in Christianity, the Ten Commandments are revealed? They were handed to people. They did not think about them or create them.
Okay. Right. That would be something like a Shruti then.
Right.
The next body of literature, scriptures, is called Smriti. Smriti is something that has been created by human brain, basically. Okay, and these, what subsequent yogis they had to do was to use the essential information in the Vedas and then transfer that knowledge into more practical formats. Okay, so Smritis are like Manu Smriti and, you know, Shaundilya Smriti and all that. There are several of these. They essentially contain information like what are the duties of a householder, what are the duties of a king, what are the duties of a farmer, you know, how you should deal yourself in this society and all that. What are some of the laws and regulations that you should follow, how the government should be run, all those things.
Interpretation of Vedas in different contexts.
In different contexts, yes. So that becomes a Smriti. So there is Shruti, there is Smriti, and then the third category is called Puranas. Puranas. What's Puranas?
Old stuff.
It's all old. Puranas are, again, was the effort to explain the concepts in the Vedas through fairy tale-like stories, where people could fly, you know, you could create other beings without having any sexual contact, things like that. All those things, you know, they were all a part of the Purana. Fairy tale-like stories, totally practically unbelievable, but they would give you the essential meaning of the Vedas. Okay? So there are 18 of those Puranas, and they are like Shiva Purana, Brahma Purana, and all those things. You know.
Lot. P-U-R-A-N-A,
Purana. Shruti. Hold on. Let me see. Hold on a second. I wish I had that slide here. I let me see. All right. S-H-R-U-T-I. That's Shruti. Can somebody, can everyone read that?
Do you want me to change the font size?
Yeah, I can try that, I think. Okay. All right. Okay, so that's Shruti. And then Smriti is R-I-T-I. Okay, Smriti. And Purana, P-U-R-A-A-N-A, Purana. And finally, the last one is... Tantra. All right. So this is how kind of it all fits into the ancient set of scriptures. Now, tantras are also very ancient. What is tantra? Tantra is, you know, it's a, there's a sect in India which is called Shaivites. They follow the Lord Shiva as their main supreme being. What's Lord Shiva? Who's Lord Shiva? Okay, so there are three, you can say, gods. They are called Trinity. So one is called Brahma. The next is Vishnu. I'm doing all short, you know, lowercase. I hope you don't mind. And the third is Shiva. So again, these are all concepts from these texts called Puranas. Remember I mentioned there is a text called Purana. And because it was very difficult for a common man to understand the concept of one single God, so they said, all right, we'll try and divide the responsibilities of God into many multiple responsibilities and give them names. So Brahma became responsible for creating this universe. Vishnu became this God which was supposed to sustain the universe having been created. Vishnu was the sustainer of the universe. And then because of this cycle that goes on, this creation cycle is a continuous cycle. And Shiva was given the responsibility of dissolving it back to oneness. Okay? So those are the three kind of gods, you can say them. All right? Three responsibilities. Now, there are people in India who either believe in Shiva or believe in Vishnu, etc., etc. All right? So the people who believe in Shiva, they are called Shaivites, and in English, you know. And the people who believe in Vishnu, they are called Vaishnavites, etc. Now, the people who follow Shiva, according to them, Shiva is the single entity, real entity, supreme consciousness, and that's it. That's the Shiva. In the beginning of this creation, Shiva was all by himself, itself, whatever, right? Doing nothing, nothing was happening. But someday, he decided, I want to become many. That's the statement in the ancient text. That from this singleness, you know, I want to become many. So, to become many, you have to create something. And to create something, you need a creator. What to do, and creator is usually a female, That's how it is. So he said, okay, my better half, I'm going to create a better half out of myself and call it Shakti. All right. So he created a better half out of himself, called it Shakti, and gave her the responsibility of creating this universe. So, you know, the whole plan was brought into action. The whole creation started happening. And they had two levels of creation, basically. One is the human level, and the other is everything outside the human. So, and there is a microcosm within the human beings of everything that's in the macrocosm. You know, that's how they project it. Everything that's outside of us is inside of us. So when the creation started happening, it happened in a very systematic manner. So what was created is called elements. Okay. So according to this philosophy, according to the Tantra philosophy, there were 36 elements that were created. 36 elements. All right. Okay, so let me see. 36 elements, okay. Now, these 36 elements were divided into three categories: pure, pure impure, and impure. That's how they named them: Shuddha, Shuddha, Ashuddha, and Ashuddha. Three categories. Are you have you difficulty seeing? You're okay? Right. So, I'm not going to spend a lot of time, but, you know, you can take a look at them later. The reason I brought this up is that in our discussion on the Yoga Sutras, also we discussed the elements that were created as a part of this creation. Anybody remember that? Those of you who attended? But see, in the yoga, everything is based on the concept of another philosophical text called the Sankhya. Anybody heard the term Sankhya? We talked about that last time. So in Sankhya philosophy, the elements that are created are 23. That are these impure elements that mentioned in the very last part here. Oh, sorry. So those last bullet, that Ashuddha or impure elements, are the ones which are mentioned in the Sankhya philosophy. Those are the ones which Patanjali uses in the Yoga Sutras also. So those, they start with 24 elements, because the first one is Prakriti. Prakriti is the non-conscious entity, non-conscious. There is consciousness, which is Purusha. Purusha is the only conscious element in this whole creation. Everything else is non-conscious. So this whole body, mind, intellect, everything is non-conscious. We are borrowing the consciousness from this supreme being called Purusha to do our work. That's how it goes. So there is intellect. I'm going to just go through it very, very quickly. So these 23 elements are intellect, ego, ahankara, manas, that is the mind. Then there are the five sense elements, five sense perceptions, the sense of touch, taste, smell, etc. Five senses. Five sense organs. For the sense of hearing, there is ears. For the sense of smell, there is nose, etc. You know that, right? So five sense perceptions, five sense organs. Then there are five organs of action. Which are those? Hands for pulling, lifting, pushing, whatever, that's hands. Legs for locomotion, walking, running, jumping, that's legs. All right. Tongue for creating all kinds of damage. You are an idiot. Tongue is another organ of action. And then the other two are the organs of procreation and the organs of elimination. So those are the five organs of action. That makes it 15 plus 3, 18. Five more left. Which are the five? Guess. What is left? Elements.
Earth,
water, fire, air, and?
Akash.
Ether, yes. Akash. Very good.
Ether.
Say that again.
What was the last thing?
Earth, water, fire, air, and ether. Space. Blank space, which contains everything else. So those are the 23 elements mentioned in the Sankhya or the yoga philosophy that we normally discuss here. But in addition to that, they have added these elements called, there's this Maya, concept of Maya has been added there. Maya is what?
Illusion.
It's the illusory power. It's still a very powerful element, but it's illusory in the sense that it had to be created by, in this case, Shiva, so that the whole creation could happen. So this super creator or creatress is Shakti. Okay, but then Shakti also needs the Maya to create this whole illusion that, yes, everything is being created now. Okay, so there's Shiva, Sadashiva, and let me not get into that. Okay, but you can read all this. These are the 36 elements that were created as a part of this whole creation. The key element is Shakti. Shakti is the power behind all this. It's called Shakti. It's basically the cohort of Shiva, which is his wife Parvati, basically. All right? Now, the elements were created from a very subtle level, slowly down into the grosser and grosser and grosser levels. Subtle means very light in weight, in terms of lightness. So very subtle, very light, gross, heavier, grosser, heavier. Finally, the last element created was earth, heaviest. Okay. Now, while doing this creation, they also associated these elements with different parts of the body. Okay, so, Akash was associated, the ether, space was associated with the throat chakra, you can call it, right? Air was associated with the heart chakra, all right? Fire with the navel chakra, all right? Water with the sacral chakra, and earth with the root chakra. Okay, so these are the five elements which were also coming down, from the lighter to the grosser, to the grosser, to the heavier, to the heaviest. Eventually, the earth was the heaviest, which was at the very base of the spine. Okay, so if you're sitting down, that's the lowest part of the body. So that's where the earth was created. And now, Shakti finished her job. And very exhausting job of creating this whole entire universe. So very exhausted, very tired, very sleepy, and then go on to sleep now. She says, I'm done, buddies. I'm going to sleep. All right. So Shakti goes to sleep. Where? Wherever she was at the very end, which was the earth element. So she said, okay, this is fine. Good enough space for me. I'm going to sleep and rest here. So she sleeps at the very base of the spine. And, in terms of representation, she's represented as sleeping in a coiled form, 3.5 coils. That's how she's represented, as sleeping at the base of the spine.
So what's the relation between Brahma and Shakti?
So, again, there are different concepts, right? Different philosophical streams, different streams of understanding how the whole thing was done. If you stick with the Puranic concept, there is no concept of Shakti there. There is no concept of Shakti doing the creation. Then it's all Brahma, Vishnu and Mahesh or Shiva. Okay? You stay with the Puranic concept. If you go one step beyond that, okay, then if you go to the Vedas only, then there is only Brahman. It's not Brahma, it's Brahman, which is the only real entity. Everything else is created. Okay? And from that point of view, again, Maya comes into picture. So you need Brahman. I'm going, because of his question, I'm going kind of diverting a little bit back. Okay? So different philosophical streams of thinking as to how this creation happened. In the Vedanta philosophy, everything starts with Brahman. Brahman is the only real entity, one conscious entity, nothing else. But to do the creation, okay, again needed Maya, and so Maya is the power that you need to create, but you need somebody to do the control. So you have all the power, like the workforce, right? In a factory, you have the workforce, which is your power to do the job. But you need some CEO to control the job, right? To use that power properly. So in the Vedanta philosophy, that CEO was named?
Brahman.
Brahman is the owner of the company. Then the power is Maya. The CEO of the company was named what?
God.
Ishwar, God. So the CEO was called God, Ishwara. All right? This is all, again, very different philosophy. Now here, the owner is Shiva. Okay? The creator is Maya. The CEO is Shakti. You understand the concept now?
This could be taught as different schools of philosophy.
Absolutely, yes.
It depends on how each school interprets.
Absolutely, yes. There are all different schools of thought in India. Sometimes they are loggerheads with each other. Sometimes they also fight among themselves. My philosophy is superior than yours and things like that. All that is happening everywhere, like everyone else, right?
The Tantra is also based on the Vedas, right?
Everything is based on the initial concept from the Vedas. So is Tantra, but then they extend, based on their needs. They extend in multiple ways.
So is Maya an entity or a concept?
It's a concept.
It's not like Shiva or Shakti.
Right. It's a concept. Okay. Maya is the illusory, the power that is required to create this universe. But then you need somebody to control that power, and that's Ishwara in that case, and Shakti in this case. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it would be good if you can give us some reading material, so that we ourselves can go reference something. Yeah.
We'll talk about
that. To be precise, there's a lot. Question is, which of the small subset?
It's good. No, that's a very difficult question, That's a very difficult question. Because, unless I write my own reading material, I cannot provide. Otherwise, the material is just so vast,
Why I asked was, it's difficult to discuss in 60-minute class.
I understand.
You can just touch upon the basics.
I will try to give you some references.
But one thing I'll tell you, if you don't mind, just if you go and read any of the books, you don't get what he told in last 10 minutes.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, all those connections.
Confusing.
I've been so much into it, but I never got all these connections. So it's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Really. Thank you.
No, I'll try to get some references, if I can find something that really will sum up in a brief manner. It's hard to find that otherwise, It's very vastly.
Creator.
Yes.
And so Shakti is also.
Yes.
Creator.
So Brahma is a Puranic concept, which is pre-Tantra.
Okay.
And there are a lot of people who only believe in that. Those who do not believe in Tantra, they will go back to the Puranic concept and believe that Brahma was the creator. That's it.
I see.
Okay. Different, like I said, different philosophical streams, different ways of doing these analyses. Okay. So now, this Shakti, after having done this creation, having created this mess that we are all in, it decides to go to sleep. Okay? Now that itself becomes a big problem. All right? Why does that become a problem? Because now there are other elements, they have a free hand to play their game. Shiva is sitting up here, he's not doing anything, he's not capable of doing anything without Shakti. Shakti is sleeping carefree. Other elements wake up and they raise their ugly head and start creating havoc. And who are these ugly elements? Well, it's not ugly. Let's not call them ugly. The elements that start functioning, that's how we function our life, basically, based on those. I should take that back. Not ugly. Now, the biggest of these are the three gunas. Does anybody know what three gunas are?
Ahankar.
No. Three gunas. Sattva, rajas, and tamas. What they say is, this whole, you know, it's called prakriti, right? This word is used here is prakriti. So, everything that's not conscious, which includes our body, our mind, our intellect, everything, it's non-conscious. Okay, that's called prakriti. Everything in prakriti is a composite of three gunas, sattva, rajas, and tamas. Sattva is kind of, we talked about it in some depth in one of the classes a couple of months ago, so I'm not going to go into too much depth. But sattva is the concept of purity, cleanliness, and good thinking, positive values, and all that. That's sattva. Rajas is all action, motivation, desire, ambition, gung-ho, you know, go-getter, that kind of an attitude is rajas. Tamas is all dullness, sleepiness, couch potato-ness, as I call it. You know, everything, some negative thoughts, maybe you desire to kill somebody will fall under tamas, etc., etc. Prakriti at any given time is a combination of these three gunas. Everything in prakriti, whether it's my body, whether it's my mind, whether it's my thought, whether it's my behavior, whether it's my emotions, it doesn't matter. Everything in this universe is a combination of these three gunas, which are present in some combination, some proportion. The problem happens, the reality is that this combination, this proportion keeps changing from moment to moment to moment to moment. At one moment, sattva is more dominant. At the very next moment, tamas might be more dominant. At one moment, I feel like going and doing something, running and this and that. The very next moment, a thought comes down, and I think I should go to bed and sleep. It happens. But that's the play of the gunas that's happening constantly in our mind, in everything that we have, not just the mind. So what is happening now is Shakti is sleeping, resting peacefully. These gunas are playing their role now. So now we are, you know, active, and they also create desires in us. They also create all kinds of actions in us. And then we went through all this theory of karma and, you know, in our Yoga Sutra studies. What is karma theory? What's karma theory? Everyone knows that. What's karma? What's the karma theory?
Karma theory?
Yes. What's the philosophy of karma?
You have to do it. You have to do it.
And?
There's reaction.
And there is an action that we do, and then it will have a karma phala. Phala is called the fruit of that action, the outcome of that action, which we have to go through. Now the fruit doesn't have to come right now immediately. You do an action now, the fruit may come in the next life, but you still have to live through it. Okay. That whole thing is a karma theory. I'm telling you all this because everything is related. You know, you cannot study Tantra just in isolation. This all is a part of Tantra philosophy. everything here that I'm talking about. And these philosophies are all shared among multiple philosophical streams, many of these thoughts.
So this karma theory goes kind of orthogonal to the Bhagavad Gita, where he says, do your job, but don't worry about the fall.
Don't worry about the fall. That's the guide. That's the guideline. That's the guideline. That's the...
But if you have to go through that, would you not worry?
If you have to?
I mean, if you have to kind of have the phala, then you would worry about the phala.
Right? No, don't worry about it. The whole point is not to worry about anything. That's the whole point of... It doesn't matter. I mean, if you do something, you have to reap the benefits of or the phala of it, good or bad. But don't worry about it.
Yeah, the point is it will come back.
Yes.
In a good bad form or bad form.
Exactly.
This life or next life.
Yes, it will come back. By worrying, it's only going to make it worse, not going to make it better.
But I guess don't worry after the action. Think of it not doing the action or doing the action.
Beautiful, yes. So think before you leave, basically.
Yes.
You know? Okay. So now, we go back to this Kundalini concept now, because Kundalini is sleeping, and because the Kundalini is sleeping, like I said, it's causing some problems now, because now we are in a free format. We have desires, so we do action, and sometimes we do good action, sometimes we do bad action, then we have to suffer the consequences of our action, maybe not in this life, but in the next life. All this is happening. And it's a lot dependent on the play of these gunas. So, what do we need to do then? What should we do? Wake up this Kundalini and ask her to move up so that it's right now at the base of the spine. The master is here, Shiva is here. So we have to wake this Kundalini up and guide her so that it goes up and merges with the master. When that happens, the gunas disappear. Okay? When gunas disappear, no problem.
So we don't want any of the gunas?
No. I'm sorry. Wrong use of words. Gunas become balanced. Sorry. Good catch. They don't disappear. Their imbalance disappears. Okay? They get balanced. Right? And when they are in perfect balance, then we can be, like they say, fat, dumb and happy. Absolutely. Enjoy. No worry. Then there's no worry. Okay? So the whole concept of this...
Is this the same thing as what they call moksha?
Moksha is the ultimate liberation. So when the Shiva and Shakti merge together, and then we are... So what happens is, if that happens while we are still in this living body, okay, then we are called Jiva Mukta or Jivan Mukta. That means you have attained liberation while you are in this physical body still. Okay, but what might happen at that time is sometimes, you know, we end up, because of the karma, we end up doing bad things and that union might again dislodge. Okay, then we will not get moksha. You have to stay in that state so that when you leave this physical body, then you don't come back. That's called moksha.
Okay, so that's not permanent state.
It can disintegrate if you're not careful. Okay. So that's called moksha or final liberation. But that happens when you finally leave this physical body. Okay. So what is Kundalini now doing? We need to wake the Kundalini up, and it should go up the channel, whatever that, and I'm going to talk about all that now. Okay. So we need to awaken the Kundalini and then make it go up so that it can eventually merge with its boss, with its better half. And then stay happy after that. Yeah. I'm not sure if I'm following anything that I have in my slides, but let me see. That's part of the problem. I can never do that, really. Oh, this arrow? No, it doesn't work. Space would. Okay, and then how do I go back?
Backspace.
Good. Technology.
Is there any way you could email this to us? Because I just love the way you have it organized. It's so clear.
I'm going to these slides.
Yeah,
absolutely. Them. I'll be emailing them to you.
It's already emailed.
I already did.
To
those who signed up, but like I said, that I have already updated that. So I'll be sending you the updated ones now. Yeah, I'll be sharing all this with you.
Would that include the initial part, Shruti, Smriti?
I think so. Yeah. Yes. So did I miss anything here? Okay, it's called 3.5 times. The representation of Kundalini is that it is shown and depicted as 3.5 coils. And what do the 3.5 coils represent? Again, the 3 coils represent the 3 gunas, basically. There are different interpretations of those 3 coils. Okay, the most commonly mentioned is 3 gunas, sattva, rajas, and tamas. But then they also say, many texts say that these 3 coils represent the 3 states of our being. What are the 3 states of being? Waking state.
Dreaming.
Dream state.
Deep sleep.
Deep sleep. Dreamless, deep sleep. Okay, so those are the 3 states of our existence. So when they say that it represents the 3 gunas, then that half coil that's left over, what does that represent?
Transition between these states.
No, in what did I write here? I should have mentioned. So when I write that the 3 coils represents 3 gunas, that half coil represents the ego. So I got it wrong here.
I was going to say fickle-mindedness, but yeah.
That represents the ego. Because ego is what is using these gunas very, very effectively to create all the problems for us. Okay? So that half coil here represents the ego. When they represent these 3 as the 3 states of being, which is the waking state, dream state, and the dreamless state, then that half coil will represent that state of transcendence. So I got it messed up a little bit. Okay. So, any questions so far? Oh, we went through this. Okay. So again, what is Tantra? Tantra is one of the ancient systems based on the Shiva and Shakti concept predominantly, but there are many other things which are going on in Tantra. Tantra, as a concept, has had a fairly mixed kind of a reputation, especially in India, that's where it was. Because Tantra has many elements, okay? Predominantly, there are 2 broad categories of Tantra. 2 broad categories. One is called the left side. The other is called the right side. Okay? It's called Vama Pantha and the Dakshina Pantha. Okay? Pantha is a path or a manner. What is... So, anybody familiar with these 2? Left and right?
The Idam Pingala?
No. Tantra.
Okay.
Tantra. Left Tantra and right hand Tantra. Okay. The bad rap about Tantra comes from the left-hand Tantra, where the, you know, I'm going to talk about the bad part first. Okay, because bad in the sense that it can be misused. So in the left-handed Tantra, moksha or liberation is attained through the use of sexual union, physical sexual union. And it also encourages you to eat meat and drink wine. Okay? So there is, you know, this five M's in Sanskrit, you know, Madhya, Mansa, etc., you know, and finally Maithuna, which means physical sexual union. So that is, because of that, people have misused it thoroughly, that part of it. And also, you know, it has become very notorious for that. You know, even in India, it's not. So that's one part of it. The other part of Tantra is that there are many rituals in the Tantra texts, many rituals mentioned there. And some of them involve some very weird practices. Very weird practices. And if you look at the entire mythology of Shiva, you know, this God who is the Supreme Consciousness, you know, if you look at his pictures or his rituals that he does, for example, he is shown wearing a garland of human skulls. Anybody seen that? Right? He's shown wearing a garland of human skulls. He's also had all kinds of things, snakes on his body, all kinds of stuff. And then, he's a dancer. He's everything, you know, dancer. But, and where does he like to dance? Shimshan. He likes to go to the, what is Shimshan in English?
Graveyard.
Sorry. Okay, graveyard, cremation ground. He likes to go to the graveyard to dance at night. He has all this ashes on his body, the skulls of human, all kinds of weird things.
Smoke spot,
etc. Anyway, the point is, there are two ways to look at these things. Okay, one is to try and understand the real significance of what he's doing, which is mentioned in our texts. So if you go deep into the text, they'll tell you what the real significance of all this is. And it's all very positive, very beautiful. It means something very, very spiritual eventually. But if you look at it from our eyes, because our eyes are looking through our own ego, and our ego is very limited and dirty, therefore we look at it as very, very dirty, basically. That's the problem. Now, based on that, these tantrics have also evolved a lot of rituals which involve the use of mantras, yantras, tantras, you know, all kinds of stuff. And they have evolved into some bad stuff, bad reputation. That's all the left side of the Tantra. The right side of the Tantra is beautiful. You know, beautiful in the sense, very spiritual, very devotional. Of course, rituals, but very devotional rituals. Totally devoted to the Shakti, basically. It's Devi, they call it. Devi is the goddess. Goddess Shakti. So you worship the Devi, and through the Devi you want to worship eventually Shiva. Devi is more, according to this philosophy, Devi is more accessible to us. Because she is the creation, the creator, and more physically visible. Shiva is beyond us. Okay.
So is Shiva considered left?
No. Shiva is everything. Shiva is conscious.
No, sorry, the dancing Shiva.
It's nothing like that. I'm just saying that this whole thing evolved because some people misrepresented the original image of Shiva. Okay, and then they started doing all this.
Remember, tantric philosophy and Puranas are some interpretation of the Vedas.
Original
so
Vedas.
Somebody interpreted in some ways and
right. Okay. So the right-handed side of Tantra is supposedly, excellent in terms of reaching the final goal of liberation through some very spiritual and very religious practices, rituals. Okay, and that's the part where Kundalini has been mentioned very clearly. So Kundalini and all the aspects of chakras and all the nadis, etc., are a part of this whole spiritual side of Tantra. Okay? Now, as a student of yoga and as a student of Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, I like to mention that in the Yoga Sutras, there is no mention of Kundalini whatsoever. Zero. Patanjali's main focus was the mind, and all he wanted was to cleanse the mind of all the impurities. That's it. That was all the only focus of Patanjali. All right? And he did not involve Kundalini into it. Now, if you all know, as a result of the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, there is a second science that evolved later on called Hatha Yoga. Everyone heard the term Hatha Yoga? Now, that's a much later evolution from Patanjali's Yoga Sutra. And the purpose of Hatha Yoga is to eventually develop a body, mind, which is strong enough, flexible enough, so that we can eventually sit and meditate, which Patanjali wanted us to do anyway, so that we can achieve that cleanliness of the mind. That was the goal, the eventual goal. But when the author of Hatha Yoga, and the most commonly referenced Hatha Yoga manual is called the Hatha Yoga Pradipika. Anybody heard that term? Yeah. Hatha Yoga Pradipika? Okay. That's the most commonly referenced manual for Hatha Yoga. The author's name for that manual is? Anybody remember the name? Pradipika's author? Swatmaram. Swatmaram, that's the name of the author. He decided to combine the concepts from Patanjali as well as the concepts from Tantra and he merged them together into his Hatha Yoga practices. So if you read the Pradipika, there is a whole volume of information related to the Kundalini, all the chakras, all the nadis, and everything there. And he has merged them into the concepts of the Hatha Yoga practices. Asana practice, pranayama practice, meditation, everything kind of eventually has that concept.
When did that happen?
The Hatha Yoga?
And when did the combination of Hatha and the Pradipika with Kundalini?
So Pradipika came out approximately 1,000 years ago, roughly 1,000. And some say about 600 years ago, some say about 1,000. And it was written by Swami Swatmaram, and he is the one who decided to add the elements of the elements of Tantra into the practices of Hatha Yoga. Okay, so there is a very strong element of the practice of Kundalini and its awakening as a part of the Hatha Yoga practices. All right, have you got that? Okay, now the whole concept of Kundalini is to awaken the Kundalini and then start moving up. Now, before we do that, we have to understand this concept of the nadis, the subtle channels of energy, so to say. You know, there is this concept of prana. Anybody heard the term prana? What's prana?
Life force.
Life force, right? Prana is the vital life energy that keeps us alive, basically. That's prana. In the culture that I come from, when a person dies, we don't say a person died, we say prana left his body. Anybody heard that? Right? We say prana left the body. That's because most of the other functions in the body, most of the vital functions may still be functioning. People donate kidneys, they donate, different organs like eyes, etc., etc., after a person dies. That means those organs are still functional. But why are they not functioning? There's no prana in the body. So when prana leaves the body, everything else becomes non-functional. Then you have to donate it to somebody else to make, who has prana, to make it functional. And now prana is supposed to flow through these channels of energy called nadis. Nadis are not physical channels. Nadis are subtle channels of energy. They are something like, you know, in the Oriental culture, they have this energy called qi, and that flows through these channels. They're called channels of energy. They are not physical channels. So if you cut your human body, you will not see any of these channels of energy, subtle channels. According to, you know, one text which is most commonly referenced, one ancient text, they say there are 72,000 of these nadis in the body. 72,000. Okay. Of these 72,000, they say 14 are normally mentioned as much more meaningful than the others. Others are grouped into some other categories, and apparently there is a description of all those groups somewhere in the ancient texts. I don't know. Okay. So there are 14 which are now listed by most authors. And out of those 14, 3 are the most important. 3. And those are the channels that you mentioned, Jessica. So those are?
Ida, Pingala, and Sushumna.
Ida, Pingala, and Sushumna. Very good. Okay. So 3 are the most important of these nadis, or the channels of energy. Now, in addition to that, the nadis, there is this concept of chakras. Okay, what's a chakra? What's a chakra?
Energy centers,
you can say. What's that?
Cycle.
Chakra is a wheel, basically, a cycle, a wheel, or something that rotates, basically, chakra. Okay, but in the concept of this kundalini, these are the sort of the bioenergetic centers in the body which form the centers of these nervous systems, basically, and have different functions in the body, these chakras. And we will get into much more depth about the chakras in the next session, next month's session. But just to get a very quick overview, these chakras are located in the body. I already kind of hinted. The lowest chakra is at the very base of the spine. And the name of the chakra is? Muladhara chakra. Muladhara. That's the Sanskrit. I'm going to give you Sanskrit names. I hope you don't mind, because everything is in Sanskrit, okay?
Can you give both? The Sanskrit and the...
Yes. I should have it here. Hold on a second. I should have it here. Yes, right here. Okay, so there's the Muladhara chakra, which is at the very base of the spine. Okay, and one text that I read said the way to mentally visualize that chakra is to look at a spot which is the width of 2 fingers above the anus. Okay, so mentally visualize that spot, and that's the location of the Muladhara chakra. I don't know how accurate that is, but that's one of the texts I read, an old text. Then just very slightly above that and slightly behind that is the Swadhisthana chakra. Swadhisthana is the sacral, or, you know, I don't know what you call it. What do you call that? Do you call it sacral or something else? Sacral? Okay. All right. Okay, that's slightly above the Muladhara and slightly behind that. And they are basically all lined up very close to the spinal column. Okay, so they're lined up alongside the spinal column. The word Swadhisthana literally means, swa means one's own, adhisthana means a place of living. So one's own place of living, one's own abode. Don't ask me why it's called that, you know, I don't know. I'm just giving you the meaning of that word, okay? Swadhisthana, sacral. The next is called the Manipura Chakra. Again, Mani means a gem or a jewel, right? Manipura means
place where it is.
So, a place of jewels, a city of jewels as they call, right? Why? Who knows? Do you know, Nancy, why it's called Manipura? I don't know. Okay, that's at the naval center, okay? Now, when I say naval center, naval is here, but the chakra is right here, right? So, if you were to look through the navel on the spine, okay, that's where the chakra is. Or in that region, basically, all right? The next is called the Anahat Chakra, Anahat, which is the heart center. What does the word Anahat mean?
No harm.
No. Anahat means struck, something. Ahat. Unstruck sound. I'm giving you the Sanskrit meanings, right? English meanings of Sanskrit words, which I have no idea why they were named that way. Okay? If anybody knows, please add in. I'm looking at these two Kundalini teachers. So if you know anything more than that, please do let me know. Okay, Anahat Chakra. The unstruck sound. That's the literal meaning. This is called the Vishuddhi or Vishuddha Chakra. Depending on the text you read, the throat chakra. Vishuddhi means purity. Vishuddhi. And Vishuddha means something that has been purified. Just a minor difference in men. Some people call it Vishuddha, which is purified, or Vishuddhi, which is purity. Alright. The next chakra is in the third eye location, which is called the eye of wisdom, which is right between the two eyebrows, the spot. And that's called the Ajna Chakra, A-J-N-A. Ajna. Ajna means?
Command.
Very good. Ajna means command. To expect somebody to do something. Again, I have no idea why. Ajna. And finally, there is at the very crown center, it's called the crown chakra. And the Sanskrit name is Sahasrara. Sahasrara means one that has thousand. Thousand what? Whatever.
Ajna is probably because it says pituitary gland, all the glands are, endocrine glands are controlled.
That's what you know they say, because that pituitary gland is the one controlling, you know, your emotions, a lot of things are controlled by that, so maybe that's why it's Ajna, but I don't know how true that is.
But there is another line of thought which says it represents the pineal gland, which needs to be awakened to get the consciousness or reach moksha or whatever. General reading that's all.
You know, I understand that. You know, that's exactly what they say. Yeah, pineal gland, you know, all these things. Yes, Sherry.
Should we think of the third eye as being here or
back? No, it's right here. Third eye is considered to be right between the eyebrows. Because up here we have already left the region of the spine now. Okay, so we're not along the spine here.
Start connecting the chakras to the different, what's it called? Like to the
physical body,
physical parts of the body, the
endocrine system,
on the ajna, the pineal gland, the pituitary gland. You know, because they didn't know what pituitary glands, what pineal glands.
So they all came later. I don't know the whole story. And if we can find out, I'll share that with you when it was associated with that. But I don't know when. But that's what they now write down, you know. All these are the statements that I have also read, the same thing. You know. So that's, now in terms of the pronunciation, you know, the word is chakra, not chakra. It is C-H. Like in a child, chakra. Okay, so try not to pronounce it as chakra. It's not S-H, it's C-H. Okay, just one of those things. Because I hear many people pronounce it as chakra. That's not what it is. All right. So that's the, they call this Sahasrara Chakra. Sahasrara means something that has 1,000, in this case 1,000 petals of lotus. That's what the meaning of Sahasrara is, 1,000 petals. So now, you know, the Lord Shiva, which is the Supreme Consciousness, the Supreme Master, is depicted as residing here. And because he's a non-doer, he doesn't do anything. He's just watching. He's an observer. He's the seer. He just watches everything. Doesn't do anything. And our goal, our objective is to awaken this Kundalini Shakti, which has been lying dormant, sleeping at the base of the spine, and then make it move up the spine. Now, for it to move, few things have to happen. All right. First of all, we need to understand what these nadis do. Okay, so I'm going to diverge a little bit and talk just briefly about these three nadis, the Ida, Pingala, and the Sushumna nadi. Now, the way they are depicted, I don't have a good presentation here. Maybe I can draw there. Let me see. Okay, so the way it is represented is that if this is the the seven centers, I'm going to just put 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, right? So these are these sort of the centers. So this is the Mooladhara. Should I write down on this or? So I'm going to just write. I'm just going to write Moola. Okay, just so you know what is it. Swadhisthana. Swadhisthana. This is Manipura. And this is Anahata. Okay. This is Vishuddha or Vishuddhi. This is Agnya, and that is the Sahasrara. Anyway, I'm not going to write the whole thing. But the way the nadis are represented, that's what I wanted to show here. So they start here, and then they crisscross. Now, there are two ways, if you look at different texts, they'll show it depicted in two different manners. In one, they are going to start like this and go like this. Okay, and then the other one goes like this, etc. Okay, now another picture that you might see in some other texts is that they don't cross here, they cross right in the middle here somewhere. And then they kind of go around the chakras, okay? Pick the one that you like. Depending on what text you read, right? I prefer it this way, so I always like to present it. With this is the Ida, for example, Ida and the Pingala, and the Sushumna is supposed to go right through the central channel, right through the center, through these chakras. So this is the Sushumna. Now, for the Kundalini to go up, it can only go through the Sushumna. That's its designated path. Sushumna. That's the only way it can go up. But in our current state of being, that channel is blocked completely. It's not open. Why is it blocked? Because we have so much impurities, garbage and junk in our body, it doesn't let you go up. Okay. So, that is blocked. Now, the other thing we have to consider is how is prana flowing in the body? Prana. Prana is the vital life force. Prana flows through these multitude of channels of these nadis, right? So, in the case of Pida, for example, they say Ida starts at the base of the spine. All the three start there. And after crisscrossing, it ends up through the Ajna Chakra. It goes to the Ajna Chakra. So all the three reach up here eventually. And from there they bifurcate. The Sushumna continues to go to the crown. The Ida, which is the left side, it ends up in the left nostril. The Pingala ends up in the right nostril. Okay. So a few other characteristics that you should know about. Ida is the cool side. Ida is the female side. Ida is the moon side. Okay? Ida is the moon, cool, female side, right? Pingala is the opposite. Pingala is the sun, the hot, it's the male counterpart. Okay? Ida controls the right side of the body. Pingala controls the left side of the body. Ida will impact the right side of the brain. Pingala will control the left side of the brain. That's how it is, okay? At any given time, and then we are breathing also, right? Our breath is going through our nostrils and they are identified through these Pingala and Ida channels. At any given time, you will notice that one nostril is a little more dominant than the other. Anybody ever notice that?
Yeah.
One nostril is generally a little more dominant compared to the other at any given time. There is a science of yoga called Swara Yoga. Anybody heard that term? Swara Yoga?
Sound?
Swara is breath. There's another meaning of Swara is breath. So it's the yoga of breath, basically. What does that say? That says that, according to that concept, this dominance of one nostril over the other changes every 60 to 90 minutes during the day. Every 60 to 90 minutes. If in the morning when you wake up, your left nostril was more dominant, somewhere in the next 60 to 90 minutes, your right nostril will become more dominant. And another very interesting concept it says. Anybody knows that? Swara. Dominance. Okay. What it says is that this dominance is controlled by the phase of the moon. Moon. And there's a chart given. On such and such and such day of the phase of the moon, when you wake up, the left nostril will be more dominant, and the other days, the right will be more dominant. I have that chart with me somewhere. If anybody wants to check that out, let me know.
So is there a physical way to identify which part is dominant at any given point in time? Like, if I ask, can you let me know how I can find which part is dominant?
Well, from the breath side, you can always check yourself. See which one is a little more easier to do. That will tell you which side is more dominant, right? If you try to blow hard through one nose, then it will tell you whether it's left.
Any reason why it alternates?
Any reason? That's because of the imbalance that we have in our system. That's the whole idea. The whole concept of the practice of yoga is to create a balance eventually. We have imbalances because of the gunas, basically. All these imbalances happen because the gunas have been imbalanced. And we have imbalances at the physical level. If you practice yoga asana, for example, everyone will feel more flexible on one side than the other side. Everyone does that, right? So one part of the body is more flexible than the other side. Same thing with breathing. One side is more dominant than the other. Okay. Same thing with emotions. Some people are left-brained, some people are right-brained. Some are emotional, some are more analytical, etc.
Well, just for right now, I feel like my more free-flowing with my breath from the right side, so that means my left side is actually more dominant.
More dominant, yes.
Right now.
Right. They also tell you in that Swara Yoga book, they'll tell you if your right nostril is more dominant, these are the activities you should do, and these are the activities you may want to, avoid, things like that. So then it kind of borders on superstition, and that's why I don't like that text very much. Yeah, up to a point it's good, but then it kind of dives into a little more of superstition. And that's one of the charges labeled against the entire concept of Tantra. There are many rituals in the Tantra text which are on that border, you know, of superstition. Oh, don't do that because, you know, this is happening. Don't do that because that's happening. You know. So that's another kind of label against Tantra. So now we talked about the Ida and Pingala, right? The nadi system. So Ida, left side, cool side. It's called the Chandra Nadi. Chandra means moon. The Pingala is called the Surya Nadi. Surya is the sun. And then the Sushumna is the central channel. Okay. Now, within the Sushumna also there are three nadis they are mentioned, right? Chitrini, Vajranini, etc., Brahma Nadi. There are three nadis, three of them, which are inside the Kundalini. There is the Brahma Nadi, there is the Chitrini Nadi, and there is the Vajrani Nadi. I cannot translate them in English. That's what they are. Okay. The Kundalini can only go through Chitrini Nadi. That's also another thing mentioned. That's the, one of the very small channels in the within the Kundalini. So the first thing you have to do is to open the gates of that Chitrini Nadi.
Where is that located?
Right at the base of the spine. Same thing.
Chitrini.
So that's the Vajrini, Chitrini, and Brahman Nadis. You don't have to get to that level of detail, but I'm just, you know, this is... These are the three inside the Sushumna, like concentric.
And they're all at the base of the spine.
They start from that spot, yes. So what they say is that eventually the Kundalini has to move through the Chitrini Nadi, basically. That's what they say. And so they will start moving. Let's assume that, you know, we have somehow opened that gate. Okay, that gate's open now. Now the Kundalini starts to move up. But on its way, it meets with six more gates. Guess what? Six chakras on the way. And they are like shut gates, completely locked. Right? You know, so our job is to not only open these nadis, cleanse the nadis, so purification of the nadis becomes number one job. All the nadis have to be purified. And then all these, you know, we have to create a balance, first of all. A lot of things have to happen, as I can, you know, as you can guess. And then when it starts moving, chakras present a gate there. Every one of them is a gate. So now you have to cleanse the chakras, purify them, get rid of all the blockages within the chakras and around the chakras and all the nadis that are blocked. And then only there is a possibility that the Kundalini might start moving up. While it is moving up, again there is a possibility that it might want to come down because you did something stupid and you created another block somewhere else. Kundalini says, I've had enough. I'm going back to sleep now. That happens with a lot of people, they say. Right? So the concept of yoga, you know, we talked of the term Hatha Yoga. What does Hatha Yoga mean? Hatha mean?
Sun
and moon, right? It's the same thing that we talked about, Ida and Pingala, sun and moon, right? Hatha also means sun and moon. And the practice of Hatha Yoga is to bring a balance between these two polarities of sun and moon. Bring a balance. That's why it's called Hatha Yoga. Right? And some of you might have practiced this this pranayama practice called the alternate nostril breathing. You breathe in, breathe out, breathe in, breathe out. That is one of the most commonly practiced pranayama techniques which are supposed to help us bring that balance among the two, they are called the vayus or the airs, Ida and Pingala. So the concept of Hatha Yoga is practicing all these asanas, pranayama, mudra, bandha, and there are lots of different concepts within that. And the whole thing is geared towards bringing up a eventual balance in our system. Okay, balancing the gunas, balancing the nadis, balancing all the elements within the chakras. There's a lot of things to be balanced out. Balancing the two sides of the brain. Everything. So it's not an easy task, let me tell you that. Nothing is easy. It's not an easy task. All right? So, let me see if I... Oh, there's a chart here which, you know, tells you what are the different glands and all that which are identified with chakras. I'm going to skip that. Let me see if I missed anything here. Sushumna. Okay. So objective of the practice of yoga is to allow Kundalini to ascend through Sushumna. Only when Ida and Pingala are balanced can energy flow through Sushumna. Nadis need to be purified. Three nadis. Oh, Vajrani, Chitrani and Brahma, I just mentioned that. So it's already there in this chart. And the other statement is Ida and Pingala represent time. Sushumna represents timelessness. Once you enter the realm of Sushumna, is beyond time. Because that's Shiva and Shakti, once they merge, no time. I'm going to skip that. There are three more knots which are represented. Maybe you can talk about it next time. Or you can read about it. They also have to be opened, essentially. There are three more obstacles, basically. Okay? And they're all along the passage of this Kundalini, of the Kundalini passage. Three more knots. I'm going to skip that for now. I think I would like to spend just a few minutes on
Are you going to come back to that previous slide's first point sometime? The awakening.
Awakening, we'll see if I have time today. I may not have today. Maybe go back to that next time. I do want to talk about the kosha. That's an important concept. you know, this again comes from our very ancient texts, that we can look at our entire being as a composite of five koshas. Kosha means, what does the word kosha mean?
Back.
Hmm?
Back?
Bank, yes. It's an enclosure. Casing, enclosure, bank, casing, yes. The kosha, you're right. Okay, so, you know, when we talk about our awareness, for example, when in my yoga classes, I know we always talk about awareness. We have to build awareness about everything. So when we talk about awareness, what we want to understand is that awareness we want to build at these five levels. They are called the five koshas, five layers you can call them. And the most heaviest layer is the physical layer, right? Which is called the annamaya kosha, anna. What is anna? Food. That layer, that part of the body which is sustained by food, all right, which is the physical structure, my physical muscles, bones, and everything that I can touch and feel, that is called the annamaya kosha. So our first job is to become fully aware of the physical body, so to say. Especially that's very applicable when we're doing the asana practice. Am I aware of what's going on at my physical level? You know, my bones, my joints, my muscles, my limbs. Okay, that's the physical level of awareness. What's the next level? Next layer is the
Pranamaya.
Pranamaya Kosha. What's Pranamaya Kosha? Prana is the vital life energy, so it's the layer which is sustained by the prana, which is the physiological system of the body, so to say. All the physiological. What comes under that? Physiological stuff? Prana? Any thoughts?
Breath.
Breathing is a part of that. Breathing, all the circulations in the body, the blood circulation and everything else that is circulating, all the digestive system, assimilation, elimination, things like blinking of the eyes, burping, coughing, everything. You get the idea, right? That's all a part of the physiological system which is sustained by the breath, by the vital life energy at that level. Glandular functions, everything, hormonal functions, all that stuff. What's the Manomaya Kosha? What's Manomaya Kosha? So what comes under the mind kosha?
Thoughts,
yeah. So all the thinking, all the cognition, you know, through the five senses we get all the cognition done. Everything else, thinking, willing, desiring, worrying, getting stressed out, getting anxious, all that is a part of that Manomaya Kosha. So that's the next level of awareness. Are we aware of what's going on? Most of the problem comes because we are not aware. We get stressed out, we don't know we are stressed out. And it only shows up later. We get angry, we don't know we are angry, but we just act out. Right? And they say if you're angry, if you just become aware that you're angry, your anger will melt down. Have you heard that? Anybody heard that? You just become aware, oh my God, I'm angry. That's it. That will help you calm down a little bit.
That's why they say don't take decisions when you're angry.
Right. Yeah, but then you have to be aware that you're angry. That's the whole point. Most of the time we're not aware. That's why we make decisions when we're angry. And they're all faulty decisions. They come back and haunt us later. So that's the Annamaya Kosha. What's the next one? Vijnanamaya Kosha. What does that mean?
Science.
No, Vijnana in this case is not science. No, that's a different...
Knowledge
or... What we want to understand here is, you know, the knowledge is in the mind also, right? But vijnana means it's a very pure knowledge now. We're talking about intuitive knowledge, which is based on our pure intuitive wisdom. It's not cluttered by our ego. Our knowledge normally is cluttered by the ego. We all know that, right? We have knowledge, but it's all colored or cluttered by the ego. We want to, if we want to take a step further, higher or deeper or subtler, we want to get rid of the influence of the ego and then go with our pure intuition. That's called vijnana. So that's the Vijnanamaya Kosha. And the last kosha is?
Anandamaya.
What is ananda? Ananda is total state of blissfulness, where now you have hopefully transcended the other koshas, you have become aware of that, all that, and you finally have connected with your own intuition. Okay? And when you do that, when you have connected with your own intuition, then there is nothing to worry about, because now you are not encumbered by the ego, and then you can be fat, dumb, and happy. Totally blissful. No worries now, from now on. So these are the five levels of awareness. They are called kosha. And for the most part, the lower three, the Annamaya, Pranamaya and Manomaya, are easily accessible to us. We can at least watch what's going on. If we are aware, we can watch them. The one that is difficult to access is the Vijnanamaya kosha. And it is difficult because it is cluttered by the ego. Okay, so to get to that level, we have to purify the ego first before we can get there. And that's where all these yoga practices come into the picture. I'm looking at the time. I wanted to do actually a practice. Or should we? What's your thought now? Do you want to do the practice, which is a little meditation practice based on the chakras, or just keep going discussion?
Practice.
Practice, okay.